Bloodfall by T.C. Boyle. It started about 3:30, a delicate tapping at the windows, the sound of rain. No one noticed. The stereo was turned up full and Walt was thumping his bass along with it. The TV was going. They were all stoned, passing wine in a glowing pipe, singing along with the records, playing Botticelli and Careers and Monopoly, crunching crackers. I noticed. In that brief, scratching silence between songs, I heard it, looked up at the window and saw the first red droplets huddled there, more falling between them. Gesh and Scott and Isabel were watching TV with the sound off, digging the music, lighting cigarettes, tapping fingers and feet, laughing. On the low table were cheese, oranges, wine, shiny paperbacks, the hash pipe. Incense smoked from a pendant urn. The three dogs sprawled on the carpet by the fireplace, Siamese cats curled on the mantel, the bench, the chair. The red droplets quivered, were struck by other, larger drops falling atop them, and began a meandering course down the window pane. Alice laughed from the kitchen. She and Amy were peeling vegetables, baking pies, uncanning baby smoked oysters and sturgeon for hors d'oeuvres, sucking on olive pits. The windows were streaked with red. The music was too loud. No one noticed. It was another day. When I opened the door to investigate, the three dogs sprang up and ran to me, tails a wag. They stopped at the door, sniffing. It was hissing down now, a regular storm. It streamed red from the gutter over the door, splashing my pant leg. The front porch smelled like raw hamburger. My white pants were spotted with red. The dogs inched out now, stretching their necks. They lapped at the red puddle on the doorstep. Their heads and muzzles were soon slick with it. I slammed the door on them and walked back into the living room. Gesh and Scott were passing the pipe. On the TV screen were pictures of starving children, distended bellies, eyes as big as their bony heads, spiders' arms and legs. Someone was laughing in the kitchen. "Hey," I shouted, "do you dig what's happening outside?" Nobody heard me. The windows were smeared with red. It fell harder. Gesh looked up to pass the pipe. "What happened to you?" he said. "Cut yourself?" "No," I said. "It's raining blood." Gesh was in the shower when the TV screen went blank. Earlier, when everybody had crowded around the open door, holding out their hands to it as it dripped down from the eaves, wowing and cursing and exclaiming, Gesh had pushed through and stepped out, down the stairs and out under the maple tree. His white pants, shirts, and shoes turned pinkish, then a fresh, wet red, the color of life. "It's fantastic out here," he yelled. We held back. In a minute or two, he came back up the steps, his face a mosaic mortared in blood, the clotted hair stuck to his forehead. He looked like the aftermath of an accident or a casualty of war. "How do I look?" he said, licking the wet red from his lips. "Like the mask of red death or something, huh?" Scott was taking pictures with his Nicormat. The smell when Gesh stepped in reminded me of a trip I took with my mom and dad when I was in third grade, an educational trip. Every weekend we took an educational trip. We went to the slaughterhouse. Gesh smelled like that when he came in. Amy made him take a shower with baby shampoo and peppermint soap. She laid out a fresh white shirt and pants for him, and his white slippers. Scott ran downstairs to the darkroom to develop his pictures. Basically, he does black and whites of slum kids in rakish hats giving him the finger. Old slum women, their fingers stewed to the bone. Old slum men, fingering port pints in their pockets. These he enlarges in frames and hangs about the house. One of them hangs in the corner over Alice's reclino love chair, with the dyed rabbit fur cover. Another hangs in the dining room over my 125-gallon aquarium. The rabbit fur is dyed black. Walt took a break for a minute to change records and adjust the treble on his amp. In the ringing silence that ensued, we realized that the TV was emitting a thin, high-pitched whistle. There was no picture. "What the fuck?" said Isabel. She jumped up, flipped through the channels, all gray, all emitting the same whistle. Isabel's eyes were bleared. "Let's try the radio," she said. It, too, the same insidious whine. "The phone," she shouted. The phone hummed softly in her ear. My ear, Walt's ear, Amy's ear. It was the same sort of hum you get from an empty conch shell. "It's dead," I said. We stood there, mute, staring at the receiver suspended from its cord, clickless and ringing. We theorized. Maybe it's a national emergency. Maybe it's D-Day. Maybe it's the nuclear holocaust. Maybe it's Judgment Day. Maybe it's the rockets they're sending up. But we all suspected the soundness of these extrapolations. Probably it was just some new form of pollution, and a few wires down in the storm. Gesh appeared in fresh white, smelling like a candy cane. He walked deliberately to the pipe, thumbed in a chunk of hash, and sucked the flame of a match through it. Isabel, quickly sedated, picked out a couple of albums, and Walt ducked under the embroidered shoulder strap of his bass. The blast of music sealed the room, stopped the ticking at the panes. Alice brought in the hors d'oeuvres, and a comforting smell of exotic dishes a bubble in the kitchen. I sat, smoked, and ate. In the morning I slipped early from the warmth of the nest, Alice's tender buttock, Gesha's hairy satyr's foot framed there beneath the sheets. Wrapped my white robe over white pajamas, stepped into my fluffy white slippers, and went downstairs, as I always do on Saturdays, to watch cartoons. My mind was a tabula rasa, wire-brushed with intoxicants. My dreams had been of cool colors, the green of the forest, the cerulean of the summer sky. In the living room, a pinkish light suffused the slats of the blinds. The window was like stained glass. In the early morning quiet, the red splashes drummed against it. I was stunned, and all alone there, at that early hour, frightened. Then I heard the scratching at the door. The dogs had been out all night. Without thinking, I opened the door, and they rushed in, great living lumps of raw flesh, skinned carcasses come to life, slick with blood, their bellies bloated with it. "No, no, get down!" But they were already up on their hind legs, pawing affectionately at me, their fetid breath in my face. Their teeth were stained red, blood hung even in the sockets of their eyes. "Get down, goddammit!" My robe, my pajamas, my fluffy white slippers were ruined. The blood crept through the white cotton like a stain in water. I kicked out at the dogs. They backed off and shook themselves. A fine blood mist spotted the walls, the white rugs of the hallway, the potted plants. The dogs grunted, eased themselves down, and licked their paws. Blood seeped from beneath them. I felt sick from the stink of it, and so upset with the mess that tears began to crowd my eyes, exasperated, hopeless tears. The hallway looked like a sacrificial altar, my arms like the gory high priest. I would wash and go back to bed, face life later. In the bathroom, I stepped carefully out of my clothes in an effort to avoid staining the bath mat. It was no use. Blood oozed from the fluffy red slippers. I wiped my hands and face on the lining of the robe, bundled everything together and stuffed it into the hamper. 7 electric toothbrushes, 7 cups, and 7 hot combs hung on the rack over the sink. We kept the 7 electric shavers, each in its own carrying case, stacked neatly in the cabinet. I stepped into the shower, the tap of blood against the bathroom window loud in my ears, and turned on hot, full force. Eyes pressed tight, face in the spray, I luxuriated in the warm, pure rush of the water. I'd always taken a great deal of pleasure in showering and bathing, in being clean. It reminded me of my mom and the baths she used to give me, sponging my crotch, kissing my wet little feet. But there was something wrong. That odor. Good God, it was in the water supply. Horrified, I leapt from the shower. In the steamed-over mirror, I was newborn, coated in blood and mucus, pulled hot from the womb. Diluted blood streamed down my body, puddled at my feet. I lifted the toilet seat and puked into the red bowl, hung my head and puked. Puked and cried until Amy came down and found me there. Gesh sat back in the stuffed chair. He wore his white robe with the gold monogram and his slippers. The bloodfall hammered on. "We've got to look at the precedents," he said. There was a pie and a souffle in the oven. We were in the living room, sipping apricot nectar, munching buns. Alice, in the entrance hall with detergent and scrub brush, was muttering like Lady Macbeth over the carpet stains. "What precedence?" I asked. "Like all of that shit that went down in Egypt about 3,500 years ago." Walt was tuning his bass. He picked a rumbling note or two and looked up. "You're thinking of frogs, brother. Millions of frogs. Frogs under the bed, frogs in the flour, frogs in your shoes, clammy frogs, flippers slapping at your ass when you take a shit." "No, no, there was something about blood, too, wasn't there?" "Yeah," said Walt. "Christ turned it into water. Or was it wine?" "You know what happened in Egypt? You want to know?" My voice cracked. I was getting hysterical. A cat jumped into my lap. I tossed it over my shoulder. Everything in the room had a red cast, like when you put on those red cellophane glasses as a kid to read 3D comic books. Gish was staring at me. "So what happened?" "Never mind," I said. Amy howled from the basement. "Hey, you guys, guess what? The stuff is ankle deep down here, and it's ruining everything. Our croquet set, our camping equipment, our dollhouse." The announcement depressed us all, even Gesh. "Let's blow a bowl of hash and forget about it," he suggested. "Anyhow," said Walt, "it'll be good for the trees." And he started a bass riff with deep, throbbing note. The hum of it hung in the air even after the lights went out and the rest of his run attenuated to a thin metallic whisper. "Hey," he said, from the kitchen. "Oh, shit!" A moment later, Isabel came in wringing her hands. "Well, the breakfast's ruined. We've got a half-baked pie and a flat souffle sitting in the oven, and a raw, eggy blob purporting to be eggnog in the blender." There's a strange cast to the room now. Not the gloom gray of a drizzly day, but a deep burgundy, like a bottle of wine. "Well, what am I going to do with it all? Give it to the dogs?" The dogs glanced up briefly. Their hair was matted and brown with dried blood. They were not hungry. Scott whined. "I'm hungry." I was scared. I'd been scared all along, scared from the moment I'd noticed the first drops on the window. I looked at Gesh, our leader. He was grinning in that lurid light, sucking reflectively on the pipe. "Don't hassle it, Iz," he said. "Mark and me'll pop down to the deli and get some sandwiches." "I don't want to go out there. I'll lose my lunch." "Come on, don't be such a candy ass. Besides, it'll give us a chance to talk to somebody, find out what's going on." He stood up. "Come on, Mark, get your boots." Outside was incredible. Red sky, red trees, red horizon, the whole world, from the fence to the field to the mountains, across the river, looked like the inside of some colossal organ. I felt like an undigested lump of food, Jonah in the belly of the whale. There was the stench of rotting meat. The bloodfall streamed down hard as hail. Under the eaves on the porch, we were fooling with our rain hats, trying to get up the nerve to run for the car. Gesh, too, I could see, was upset. Yesterday it had been a freak. Today, a plague. "Well, what do you think, bro? Make a run for it?" he said. We ran down the steps and into the mud. I slipped and fell, while Gesh hustled off through the blinding downpour. It was deeper now, lying about the low spots in nasty red-black puddles. I could feel it seeping in, trickling down my leg inside the boot. Warm, sticky, almost hot. The smell of putrefaction nauseated me. I choked back the apricot nectar and biscuits, struggled up and ran for the car. When I got there, Gish was standing beside the door, blood drops thrashing about him. "What about the seats?" he said. "If we stain him with this shit, it'll never come off." "Fuck it, let's just get out of this. I mean, I got a lot of scratch invested in this here BMW, bro." The wind whipped, blood flailed our yellow slickers, dripped from the flapping brims of our silly yellow rain hats. We both climbed in. The engine started smooth, like a vacuum cleaner. The wipers clapped to and fro, the windshield smeared. "Let's drive to the desert, the Arizona desert, and get away from this shit," I said. My voice was weak. I felt ill. Automatically, I reached for the window. "Hey, what the fuck you doing?" Gesh said. It streamed down the inside of the glass, bubbled over the upholstered door, puddled in the ashtray on the armrest. I rolled the window up. "I feel sick," I said. "Well, for Christ's sake, puke outside." I didn't. The thought of hanging my head out in that insane, unnatural downpour brought it up right there. In the sealed compartment, the bouquet of the vomit and stink of the mud blood on our shoes was insupportable. I retched again, then dry retched. "Oh, shit," said Gash. "I'm going back in," I said, the edge of a whimper in my voice. 5 minutes later, Gash returned, cursing. Scott was on his way out the door, 3 cameras strung round his neck to get some color slides of the dripping trees. "What's the matter?" he said. "You back already?" "Couldn't see a fucking thing. I got down to the end of the drive and smacked into the stone wall. The wipers are totally useless. They just smear the crap all over the windshield. It's like looking through a finger painting." "So what happened to the car?" "It's not too bad. I was only going about 2 miles an hour." Alice emerged from the kitchen, a pair of lighted candles in her hand, egg-walking to avoid spilling the hot wax. "Gesh, take your slickers off. You're dripping that shit all over the floor. Couldn't make it, huh?"
"No."
"What are we going to do for food?" she asked.
"Scoop it up," Walt shouted from the living room. "Scoop it up and pour it into balloons. Make blood pudding."
I was sitting in a chair, weak, stinking, blood crusting the lines of my hands. "I'm fed up with it," I said. "I'm going to lie down."
"Good idea," said Gesh. "Think I'll join you."
"Me too," said Alice. "Can't do anything here. Can't even read or listen to music."
"Yeah," said Walt. "Good idea. Save me a pillow."
"Me too," said Amy. Scott stepped from beneath the cameras, strung them across the back of my chair. He yawned. Isabel said it would be better if we all went to bed. She expressed a hope that after a long nap, things would somehow come to their senses. I awoke from fever dreams, a tropical forest, me in jodhpurs and pith helmet, queasy-faced, sharing a draft of warm cow's blood and milk with tree-tall Maasai warriors, to a rubicund dimness and the gentle breathing of the rest of the crew. They loomed, a humpback mound in the bed beside me. My ears were keen. Still, it beat on the roof, sloshed in the gutters. Downstairs, somewhere, I heard the sound of running water, the easy, soughing gurgle of a mountain stream. I sat up. Were we leaking? I slipped into Amy's slippers, lit a candle, crept apprehensively down the stairs. I searched the hallway, living room, dining room, kitchen, bathroom. Nothing. A cat began wailing somewhere. The basement. The cat bolted out when I opened the door, peered down the dark shaft of the stairway. The flood was up nearly to the 5th step, almost 4 feet deep, I guessed, and more churning audibly in. The stench was stifling. I slammed the door. For the first time, I thought of the dike. Why, it's blood! If the dike went, it must be straining at its foundations this very minute. I envisioned us out there, heroically stacking sandbags, the wind in our faces whipping our hair back, the rising level of the flood registered in our stoic eyes. Then I thought of the tepid plasma seething in my nose, my mouth, my eyes, and felt ill. Gesh came down the stairs, scratching himself sleepily. "How is it?" he said. I advised him to take a look at the cellar. He did. "Holy shit, we've got to do something. Start making barricades, strapping floatables together, evacuating women and children and dogs." He paused. "I'm starving," he said. "Let's go see what we got left, bro." From the kitchen, I could hear him taking inventory. 2 6-packs of warm Coke, a jar of Skippy peanut butter, crunchy, no bread, 10 cans of stewed tomatoes, half a box of granola, a quart of brown rice, 1 tin of baby smoked oysters. Not a fuck of a lot. "Hey, Mark, join me a late afternoon snack?" "No, thanks. I'm not hungry." We sat around the darkened living room that night, a single candle guttering, the sound of bloodfall ticking at the windows, the hiss of rapids rushing against the stone walls of the house, an insidious sloshing in the basement. Seepage had begun at the front door, and Isabel had dumped a 50-pound bag of kitty litter there in an attempt to absorb the moisture. Atop that was a restraining dike of other absorbent materials, boxes of cake mix, back issues of Cosmopolitan, electric blankets, Italian dictionaries, throw pillows, three dogs, a box of Tampax. A similar barricade protected the basement door. When Gesh had last opened the window to look, the red current eddying against the house had reached almost to the windowsill. We were deeply concerned, hungry, bored. "I'm bored," said Amy. "I'm hungry," whined Scott, "and I'm sick of Coke. I want a hot cup of moo tea." "It stinks in here," carped Isabel. "Reminds me of when I was 15, working in the meat department at the A&P. "My teeth are gritty," Alice said. "Wish the water and the damn toothbrushes would work." Blood began to drip from the windowsill in the far corner of the room. It puddled atop the 36-inch Fisher speaker in the corner. One of the cats began to lap at it. Walt paced the room, a man dislocated. Deprived of his base, he was empty, devoid of spirit, devoid of personality. He was incapable now of contributing to our meaningful dialogue on the situation. Gesh, however, tried to amuse us, take our minds off it. He said it was just a simple case of old Mother Earth menstruating, and that by tomorrow, the last day of the moon cycle, it would no doubt stop. He passed around a fifth of Chateau Neuf and a thin joint. The pool beneath the door began to spread across the floor, creeping, growing, fanning out to where we sat in a small circle, the candlelight catching the blood in our flared nostrils. Shocked silent, we watched its inexorable approach as it glided out from the barricade in finger-like projections, seeking the lowest point. The lowest point, it appeared, was directly beneath the naugahyde pillow upon which my buttocks rested. Slowly, methodically, the bulbous finger of blood stretched toward me, pointed at me. When it was about a foot away, I stood. "I'm going to bed," I said. "I'm taking 2 Tuinols. Try not to wake me." In the morning, when I woke, Gesh sat in a chair beside the bed, smoking a cigarette. The others slept. "It stopped," he said. He was right. The only sound was a sporadic drip-drip beyond the windows, a post-storm runoff. The celestial phlebotomy had ceased. "Good," was all I could manage. But I was elated, overjoyed, secure again. Life returned to normal. "Hey, let's slip down to the deli and get some sandwiches and donuts and coffee and shit. Sneak back and surprise the rest of the crew," Gesh said. Curiosity stirred me, and hunger too, but my stomach curdled at the thought of the gore and the stink, the yard like a deserted battlefield. I stared down at my pajama sleeve. Amy's sleeping wrist lay across mine. I studied the delicate contrast of her white wrist and the little pink and brown figures of cowboys on my pajamas. "Well, what do you say?" asked Gesh. I said, "I guess so." We pulled on our corduroys, our white rubber boots, our mohair sweaters. Downstairs, the blood had begun to clot. In the hallway, it was still sticky in places, but for the most part, crusted dry. Outside, a massive fibrinogenification was taking place under a dirt-brown sky. Scabs like thin coats of ice were forming over the deeper puddles. The mud was crusting underfoot. Fresh blood ran off in streams and drainage ditches. The trees drooled clots of it in the hot breeze. "Wow, dig that sky, bro," Gesh said. "Brown as a turd." "Yeah," I said, "it's weird. But thank Christ it stopped bleeding." Gesh started the car while I broke the scab crust from the windshield. It flaked and crumbled in dusty grains. I climbed in, laid some newspaper over the day-old vomit on the floor, steeled myself against the stench. Gesh accelerated in an attempt to back out from the wall. I could hear the wheels spinning. I poked my head out. We were stuck up to the frame in mud and gore. "Fuck it," Gesh said. "We'll take Scott's car." We started up the drive toward the other car. It was then that the first pasty lumps of it began to slap down sporadically. We reached the shelter of the porch just as it began to thunder down, heavy, feculent, and wet. Upstairs, we carefully folded our sweaters, pulled on our white pajamas, and sought out the warm spots in the huddled sleeping mass of us.